It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Hear what I did there, Phil?
Yeah, g'day, Mikey. Yeah, it's a bugger being back at work, isn't it?
Sarah tells me that I didn't realise you're a ride to live to ride, free spirit.
Oh, yeah.
Lone wolf out there on the highways?
This is absolute motorcycling weather at the moment. So the nice thing is I come home in the morning and go home in the afternoon by motorbike. And as long as I don't get killed along the way, it's a really pleasant ride.
That's I think you share that with most cyclists and motorcyclists.
And
automobile drivers too.
In fact,
even people walking around just day to day, getting killed on the way home is something that none of us want to look forward to. And we live in a safe city, and we can thank you, I suppose, in a small piece for that.
A lot of people for that, I think. Yeah, I think the thing when you're on two wheels is that you're really conscious that you don't have that protective shell around you, so you're a lot more alert to what you're doing than when you're driving the car. You're listening to the radio and
take the world in a love embrace.
Fire all of
your guns, and then you explode into space. That'd be right.
So it's beautiful weather, and I would rather be on holiday still, but there's quite a few things I have to do, and just been going around looking at some of the storm damage, actually. I was out at yesterday, and they showed me. I was there with one of the volunteer fishery officers, and he took me down the marina, and he said, to see the top of the pole, the mooring pole that the pontoons ride up and down, he said, the pontoons lifted right to the top of those poles. And Friday I'm going up to Stanmore Bay and Orewa and have a look at some of the damage up there. And of course I've got a batch out at Orewa Point, so I had to drive back for the Banksy exhibition, which we should talk about too. Kawakawa Bay, which is on the flat there, the king tide and the surge from the storm, it just took the water straight over the road, all the shell off the beach, the debris right across the road and onto the properties. So, hey, the really good thing is all the locals were there. A couple of hours before the contractors employed by the council turned up, the locals were there helping each other clean up, cleaning the road. Really good to see that community spirit.
It's what we do, Phil. It's what we do.
It's important. I was at Civil Defence, or Emergency Management Control, I think it's called now, yesterday, and we were running through scenarios on stuff. And, if there is a serious event, a tsunami or something like that, God forbid, people are going to have to rely on themselves a fair amount, because the sheer scale of it means that, your authorities, even by the time you've mobilised your police, your fire service, your army and all of that, the authorities just couldn't cope with it. So one of the things that we've got to think about in terms of emergency management is how we as a community can become more resilient, prepared for, some of these events that might happen. There'll be more and more king tides with climate change. We've got to make structural change. We've probably got to, we're going to do things like lift Tamaki Drive, etc.
Sure, that'll be mellow.
That'd be good, but it's quite worrying when you think of the potential of a major event and how we as a city would cope with it. Fortunately, the storm, last week was on the mild side, but that's not to say that a whole lot of people weren't affected by it.
And I guess we had a couple of days of warning that it was on its way and it was going to be pretty hectic. And it was one of the rare times lately where the meteorological services sort of predicted something and it pretty much played out the way they said it was going to.
It was very much like that. We were down at the beach at Orewa Point, and I've got this little traditional.
Oh, you've got a batch there at Orewa Point. Saying.
Little traditional Kiwi batch, and we sit on the top of the cliff. The cliff's been falling away during the winter with all the heavy rain, and we were just there as the wind, you could hear the roar of the surf on the beach there and the rocks moving up and down the beach, but the whole house was shaking on its foundations. So we were just wondering whether we were still going to be upright by morning, but we got through it. But it's it's chewed away at the cliff again. I was out looking at the Eastern Beach was another beach in Auckland that was affected by it, talking to Barry
Curtis.
He had the unfortunate situation. He'd been up on the top of the cliff, and the cliff had fallen away, and his house had literally crumbled into the ocean. This was 5 years ago. Now he's down on the foreshore, and the king tide came right up to the door of the garage, but didn't quite get into his house. So
good view, but still, I guess.
It's a beautiful beach out Eastern Beach Way, but You know, and to be fair, Auckland Transport were right onto it. They'd cleared the roads up, and we're going to have the people out there working on the beach, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the stormwater systems. The it's a big day when Tuckabuna Beach is closed down.
Well, it's that was actually, it wasn't in the end. It wasn't sewage, as the lifesavers had.
But it wasn't good. It wasn't good. It didn't pass the safe swim test.
No, absolutely didn't. And if you look at the website, you would have seen that we closed the beach, because what happens, you know, a lot of that stormwater washes off the roads, and when it's been dry as long as it has been, you've got all sorts of rubbish on the road, everything from petrol and oil and dog feces, and that all just washes down the stormwater and onto the beach. So we've got some big problems there. But you know, as the 10-year budget plan indicates that I released at the end of last year, we're serious about doing a clean-up on that and doing it in 10 years, not the 30 years they had planned for. But that means everybody's going to have to contribute a bit more through a targeted rate. But I think, you know, I've just been following the media on that. I think Aucklanders are ready for it. You know, all of us, you know, our Christmas holiday memories, you know, even the old guys like you and me, well, mainly me, not so much you, you can remember back to your Christmas is always at the beach. We want the beaches to be great for our kids and our grandkids. And if we've got to spend a bit to clean up our stormwater system and our wastewater system, let's do it.
Is this additional to what we were talking about this time, a couple of months ago?
This is what goes out in the consultation document on the 28th of next month.
So, is it additional? Because, I mean, you talked about earmarking a bit of money for that last year.
It's the same as I was talking about last year. It's the $1.27 a household per week.
Fair enough, too.
On average. And if you're lower income, it'll be less. If you're higher income, it'll be a wee bit more, depending on the value of your property.
When we last spoke, Carrie Dieback disease was a big, had suddenly just become one of the major issues for the council. That sort of popped up out of nowhere, essentially, didn't it? I mean, you had a bit of warning for it, but I mean, how people were talking about the new governments and how they're going to have to be careful with their purse strings and how they spend stuff. Do you have any slush fund at the Auckland City Council for emergencies, for things unexpected costs or like that? Or is it just going to all come back on the ratepayer?
I wish there isn't a slush fund there. What we've got to do is, you know, we take it out of rates, or if it's a capital works, you can borrow to a certain extent, but we're just about at the limit of our borrowing in Auckland. We hit that close to that last year.
Sell the Sky Tower.
If we owned it, that'd be nice. I'm just looking out at the Sky Tower now, and I was thinking,
sell some of those helicopters, Phil. I wasn't going to go there again, but next week, I do not want to have to play you the 35 passes of 4 o'clock in the morning helicopters.
Yeah, I know, but you know, it's either that or let the criminals get away with what they're doing. And they must
be getting away. If the helicopter has to go up there for every 10 minutes for 2 hours. Then it's they're obviously getting away with it, because they're not catching them.
Well, they are. That's the point. I'm not sure whether we spoke about this at the end of last year.
We spoke at length about it. Yeah.
But you know, in the 2 months that they've been operating 24/7, they have apprehended 800 offenders or missing persons. Mainly, they're offenders. Sometimes it's, you know, somebody with Alzheimer's that has disappeared. I mean, when I went up with them, I just realised the huge advantage of being able to zip around.
I get that. But do they have to go so slow and low and loud and over and over and over and over and over again?
What they do is once they've located the crime scene, they've got to hang around to let the squad cars on the ground, because they don't land and apprehend the offenders. They contact the people on the ground, direct them to what's happening, and direct them about what's going on. I think I mentioned to you when I went up, you know, and there was this domestic dispute, and it could have turned really nasty. And we, with the camera that we had, we were up at about 700 feet. We could literally see the guy throwing the woman's possessions out the window of the house and onto the road. And we were able to tell the people on the ground exactly where he was, where the woman who could well have become a victim in that dispute was. And, you know,
it's pretty easy when it's a domestic, it's at the house, isn't it?
But when you're above and you've got this high, high-tech camera, you can actually see what's happening. You know, you can locate the individuals.
Right.
On the video, I saw, you know, when there were these guys jump in the car, stolen car, and they drive the wrong way down the motorway, etc. If you try to chase them, they'll end up being a fatality. But if you follow them by air, you will be able to apprehend them once they stop because you know exactly where they are and there's no way they can outrun you. There's nowhere for them to hide. So, you know, it is a pain in the ass. I agree. I get helicopters going over my place, not necessarily the police helicopter. I know the noise they make.
Oh, no, this is the thing. It's not just the police helicopter. It's like about four or five different runs of the...
Anyway, get on to this. We were talking.
Did you hear that as well?
On the storm side, it was good that we had the warning. It was good that things responded, although I see in the paper today some poor guy still not got his power connected. So, you know, I hope Vector's onto that. You know, that's about 3 or 4 days. Somebody in my office, actually, they were without power for 27 hours. And
it's because of our antiquated power system that we pay loads more money for, but we don't actually get anything new, of the infrastructure.
It's an interesting thing. When you have a storm like that, lines go down all over the place. And, you know, unless you have a permanent staff that's huge, you've got to have your normal staff. They may be working overtime. They may be working, around the clock. But it still takes time to get to these places and get everything repaired. So that's just the nature of things. But it's awful when you're the person that's the victim. If you lose your power and you lose your water, suddenly you realise how much you depend on these basic commodities, these commodity services.
Hey, you've been a big supporter of the plastic bag phase out by the end of this year. Well, the year's started, so do you reckon that we'll be able to do this by the end of 2018, get rid of plastic bags?
One of the first things I did after becoming mayor, I arranged meetings with Progressive and Foodstuff and said, look, we need to phase out these plastic bags. Look, what they've done in the UK, they charge 5p, 10 cents a bag, and it reduced the number of plastic bags by over 80%. You know, literally billions of plastic bags taken out of the system. And neither of the companies at that point were keen to act. One of them said, look, we tried that before. People didn't like it. They weren't prepared to accept it. In the space of a year, they have turned right around. I know the new government will be keen to phase out the use of plastic bags or at least have the charge. It doesn't take much, you know, just to have those carry bags. We've got them in the back of our car now. And instead of coming home with 12 plastic bags, you might come home with two because you need something, you know, to put the meat in or the vegetables in. But it's so easy to really significantly reduce the waste stream from plastic bags.
You guys have got on the Auckland City Council website a great sort of a whole bunch of tips on how you can phase out using plastic bags around the home. How just the average ratepayer can go and do that. Just by think before using plastic bags for fruit and vegetables. You know, do three apples need their own piece of plastic? Before bagging your fruit and vegetables, take a bag from home.
Yeah, a lot of it's lifting awareness. You know, you look at how much you throw out each week. You know, you've got your recycling, which is good, and you've got your litter bin that goes.
It blows me away about how much recycling. Like in our house, we fill up one of those big bins like to the brim. Every 2 weeks, and it's like, do we really throw that much crap? It's just...
Maybe we've got to look a bit more at the packaging side of things as well.
We were talking yesterday about how in Britain at the moment they're talking about either putting a levy or trying to phase out the plastic-coated cardboard disposable coffee cups.
Yeah. Well, one of my sons now, he carries in his van, he's just got his own coffee cup, and he takes that in. You know, it's the one with the lid on, it's a plastic one.
Reusable one.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, people are starting to you know, focus more on that, that we don't live in a world where resources are infinite and where we can just keep burying stuff that we've disposed of. So I think we've come a long way, but we've still got further to go. One of the issues that's troubling me at the moment, because, you know, I live out in the countryside, I drive in the morning and the
On your motorbike.
The sheer amount of trash that is dumped out in the countryside by people too lazy to go to a transfer station or to use their disposal facilities.
I don't know if it's just the little boy in me, but I've always thought a trip to the tip's neat fun.
Yeah, well, it's you know, you've got the transfer stations, and yeah, they charge. But these
hardly. It's not very much though. Really, it's so practical and so sensible, and
yeah,
so and it's that peace of mind, Phil. You know, you're doing the right thing. You know.
Yeah. Well, I just looked down. I counted on the way in this morning, just driving through the countryside. There were probably about 11 different examples of where people had just dumped their rubbish on the side. Sometimes it's a sofa. Sometimes there were a whole lot of 44-gallon drums. Somebody had dropped plastic bags. Somebody else had dropped garden waste and a lot of wood rubbish. You know, just too bloody lazy. So they go out in the countryside and dump it there, cause a mess in the environment, and then we've got to pay three times as much because we've got to organise a contractor to go out and clean it up. So I'm talking to council staff this week about what we can do to hammer some of these people. It's sometimes you can track them down, and there are places where they're dumping rubbish all the time. Let's put in closed circuit TV and let's look at whether the penalties are sufficient. You know, these guys that dump their rubbish on the side of the road, good penalty for them would be to have them spend the next bloody 10 weekends cleaning up other people's dumped rubbish. I reckon that'd work well.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea, Phil. Thanks very much for talking to us again this morning.
I like the music, the sound.
I thought
music.
You might, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining you there with your... I'm not sure what sort of cool helmet you've got,
it's not got the stars and stripes painted on it like Easy Rider, but never mind, mate.
Have you got like a back patch with the Auckland City Council logo on it?
I'm not that branded either.
Like a big Bermuda car or something like that.
I'd like to be anonymous on my motorbike, mate.
All right, Phil. Speak to you again this time next week. Thank you.
Okay, Mikey. Catch you next week. Cheers.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.